Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. Pianist and composer Conrad Tau came to the studio when he was in town to play with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. We talked about his life and about how music has been part of it for a very long time.
I started playing the piano when I was about 18 months old. I have an older sister, 5 years my senior, and she was taking lessons when I was born, and we had an old upright in our house. And I think it was mimicry on two levels, because it was mimicking her practicing, but it was also mimicking these nursery tunes that I was growing up hearing, like on just like a cassette tape. It was discovering the piano and discovering that this piano existed and that there was these units of notes that you could form a melody with. And Mary Had a Little Lamb was the first thing I ever played at the piano. It was kind of piecing out, splicing together that melody kind of piece by piece. Note by note, and I have these VHS tapes of me doing that, and whenever I would play a wrong note in the melody, I would go back to the beginning and try to do the whole thing in sequence. And so it was really like discovering that you had this grammar of music, of you know, not only music, but the piano, the Western classical music grammar. And so it was discovering, you know, you have these units and you have syntax and all these things.
Wow, it's really interesting, because when we think back to our earliest memories, sometimes, I know, well, for me, sometimes it's a blur, my past life. Do you remember this process of discovery that you're talking about?
I don't remember it at all. All of this analysis of, it's like discovering language is purely based on observing like old videotapes of it happening. Because one of the beauties and weird things about how my career and my life has panned out thus far is that I cannot remember a time when I wasn't playing in some capacity. My earliest memories of being a musician involve already playing both the violin and the piano, because I started so early. So, you know, if anything, my early memories of music are like the scary ones. Like, you know, I had a time when a violin of mine, I was in China, and with crazy humidity, and this tiny little violin I had there literally just like cracked open. And I remember that vividly, because I was terrified and just horrified. So that's the stuff I remember, and also like the early like performances. But I don't remember the start at all, which is in a way a bit of a blessing, I think, because it just means that some understanding of the existence of that grammar has just been there. And so I've never really second-guessed it.
How old were you when you were in China and the violin broke?
I want to say I was like 3 or 4. I think that was really when it was. But, oh man, I would not wish that on anybody.
Well, you moved, I guess, with your family to New York when you were about 9, right?
That is correct.
So by then you were seriously studying and performing.
Yes, because when I was 5 years old, I moved with my family away from Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, which is where I was born, to a little suburb closer to Chicago called Naperville, kind of a quintessential Illinois suburb name. And I started studying at the Music Institute of Chicago, which was in like Chicago's North Shore area, and it was my first serious musical study. And my teacher there was Emilio Del Rosario, or Mr. D, as we called him at the time. And he was the first person to sort of give me serious repertoire, any sort of quote-unquote, like, standard stuff. He gave me my first piano concerto. It was Haydn D major and stuff like that. And so by the time I was 9 and moved to New York, which was also for my mother, because my mother got a job at Columbia, you know, it was just really fortuitous timing. And at the age of 9, it was kind of like, okay, next step is continue studying. And also not only continuing to study, but also going to study in an environment where maybe lots of other people were my age or, you know, younger and older, and all were passionate. It wasn't like abnormal at all.
And when did you start composing?
I started composing basically as early as when I was 3, and just in terms of trying to compose. I have these sketchbooks in which I'm trying to teach myself notation, and I think I was around 3. It's like these big papers with like 3 staffs to a page, and I'm trying to teach myself how to write clefs, and everything's wrong. But I think it was, again, to go back to the language analogy, it was just like, oh, I know how to read. The natural next step is learning how to write. So I started formal training when I was 5, but I've been writing kind of, it's always been part of it. they've always informed each other.
So you've been playing and studying and writing, and you started performing with major orchestras when you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. You've won many competitions and gotten awards, and you're still very young. When you look at your trajectory, are there certain milestones or turning points that pointed you in one artistic direction or another?
That's an interesting question. I usually don't think in terms of milestones, not necessarily out of specific intention, but now out of more just a general philosophy that if I focus on one thing as being the moment, like that moment, some moment of crystallization or some really huge impetus, that doesn't feel quite accurate to how I've lived, and B, it risks maybe giving too much significance to the to the point of fetishization of like a specific moment. That being said, I think that for me, what I do, how I do, have little signposts in my life thus far, it's mostly just working with new mentors and teachers and stuff like that. That's really definitive, just because that's so huge in one's life, is, you know, switching, changing teachers, and suddenly the voice in your head, the person who shapes the voice in your head, is changing. And that's always a big, 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 you know, chapter.
So are there particular mentors that have meant a great deal to you?
Well, I've been lucky. I haven't changed very many times. I studied with Mr. D, with Mr. Del Rosario when I was 5 to 9. And then since I was 9, I've worked primarily with Veda Kaplinsky at Juilliard. And of course, I've played for other people as well. But, you know, she's been the primary person. And now it's different. Now I don't even consider myself having a primary teacher, really. You know, Veda's the person I speak to and the person I text when I'm in town. You know, can I play for you, et cetera. But at this point, it really feels like an exchange of ideas. And, you know, she's someone who has life experience and who has, of course, seen so many different pianists. And so she can offer her perspective. And so I've had amazing teachers. All of my teachers have been extraordinary because there's only been like 3 of them. But I consider myself really lucky, though. I didn't ever feel like I had to really experiment too much, because I just felt like I lucked out. Like, oh, great. There's great synergy.
So you've played all of the standard Western great masters of the piano, and you also are doing a lot of contemporary work, and you're composing yourself. What motivates you to compose a piece? Does it start with some experience you've had, or what's that seed of a new piece?
I think it's a bunch of different things. I don't know if it was Richard Rodgers or Hammerstein, but I think one of them was like, first comes the check. Which I have to say, there's a degree of truth to that. No, but I think for me, the impetus to write something, it's a mixture of some sort of emotional pull, but also an intellectual, conceptual one. Just because I think for me, I want to feel like what I'm writing, I want to be able to justify its existence, you know, to myself, just in terms of, I want to write something and then say, you know, this is why I wrote it. And then simultaneously at the same time, I think one of the difficult things as a creative person is recognizing that it's also just important to make stuff, because otherwise that you have this little voice in your head that's just like, no, nothing you're making has any justification for existing. And I think there's a tension there. But I think that that's the motivating tension. If you can utilize that and make that productive, if you can mobilize that, then it's great. So actually, in a weird way, sometimes it really comes back to just what motivates me to write a piece. In a weird way, the necessity of making things, you know, the necessity of that process. Like, I just need to do it because it means something to me, and also because it's a job.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.